This is Mike the Birdman Dodd here, and I'm here to tell you about a great online store that I use for all my clothing needs. That's BigAndTallMart.com. Fantastic selection of big and tall sizes for all occasions and all budgets. BigAndTallMart.com is a store that I trust to put me in the most comfortable and stylish clothes for all my outings. From casual and workwear to all kinds of formal wear for all occasions, this store has it all. Big and Tall Mart also carries a large selection of printed novelty tees, and trust me when I say they have a very large selection. Use promo code GEEK10 on checkout to get 10% off orders of $50 or more. Visit BigAndTallMart.com for a great shopping experience for all your big and tall clothing needs.
Yeah. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the.
Well, someone should start the podcast.
You always do.
You always do.
That's right. We are coming to you live, semi-live from the Birdcage. This is Beyond the Gauntlet. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd. We are not broadcasting from 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. But we are coming to you from Shelburne, where we've emerged from the icy hell known as winter, though I'm pretty sure by the time this podcast goes up, we'll see the snowocalypse again. I'm Mike Dodd. I'm joined with
Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet.
Jeff DeHaan, frequent patron of the Gauntlet and general lover of comic nerdiness.
Unfortunately, this time, Jamie McBurney was not able to join us yet again. You see, he strapped himself to the sign at Hasbro, dressed as Shipwreck from G.I. Joe, revolting the fact that Hasbro canceled the G.I. Joe line last week.
That? No! See, I can't see them. That line won't stay dead for long.
Oh, you know what? To be honest, I'm surprised it hasn't, because the sales of G.I. Joes have dropped quite a bit in the past 10, 15 years. So.
I'm surprised he wasn't dressed as the Baroness.
Well, he couldn't find his heels.
Oh, fair enough.
But tight leather, that he's gotten spades.
So our rescue party from last month was absolutely for naught, is what you're saying.
Yes, unfortunately. Anyway,
I'm still stewing over the G.I. Joe thing now. God, I completely forgot about that, though.
Yeah, they canceled G.I. Joe. It's very upsetting.
Considering how well the movies have done?
Yeah, I know. And here's the kicker that I can't stand about the whole thing is this is the 50th year anniversary of G.I. Joe this year.
Seriously?
So let's cancel it.
Okay. And on top of that, the big G.I. Joe con that happens in Las Vegas every year, they have pulled out of even going to their own con due to the canceling of the product line.
Wow. What a load of bullshit.
That's ridiculous. 50 years. How are we celebrating? We're not.
Exactly.
We're canceling the line.
We're taking our crap and we're going home.
That's nuts.
Which I wonder how that's going to affect the collector market.
I would imagine that in the short term, you're going to see the G.I. Joes go up in price. And then based on, again, what you said, whether or not the line comes back, you'll see them drop again in price.
I'm trying to wonder who would pick up the line or who would be smart to.
Disney. They've been buying everything else.
Yeah, Disney or Mattel. Because I know Mattel's stock price went up a couple of months ago. So their stuff tends to sell very well. But that's not what we're talking about today.
No, it's not.
It's Miller time.
It's Miller time. Yeah. Today's episode, we are talking about Mark Millar.
I know nothing about him. Well, almost nothing, surprisingly. So Chris has given me a wonderful cheat sheet. So every so often I'll be like, did you know he was born in Coatbridge, Scotland?
Well, there you go.
That is something that
fact,
I did not
number
know.
Number one.
But what I like about it is this, you know, it gives us a chance to educate you a little bit, Mike, on a writer who's actually been heralded a lot, but he isn't without his controversy.
That's true. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with Mark Millar, he is the guy that wrote such wonderful books as the Marvel Civil War. He was also responsible for Wolverine Old Man Logan. He wrote The Authority. He wrote Superman Red Son. He also wrote the Millerverse stuff, which is basically Kick-Ass, Kick-Ass 2, Hit Girl, Superior, Nemesis. He's done a lot of contributions in. In fact, one of his big contributions right now is he is the comic advisor for Fox for their movies. He is their big comic advisor, which may or may not.
So he's He's kind of like the Joss Whedon of the Fox comic movies.
Correct. Correct.
Which is kind of an interesting comparison, because there has been talk of combining the Fantastic Four and X-Men universes, which are the two properties that Fox does own the rights to, into like kind of a collected universe.
Exactly, exactly. So here we go. We have a guy who created his Millerverse. We have a guy who is a exceptional writer when it comes to creating dark and gritty comic books. And where did it all start? Well, it started in Coatbridge, Scotland, like Mike just stated. But his first foray into comics was actually writing
erotic fan fiction.
No, Mike.
Good job. That was not on my cheat sheet.
Technically, that's but not
actually, substantiated,
it's
on your
though.
Cheat sheet. The fact that I'm looking for Mike, his first comic that he wrote for DC was what?
Animal Man.
No.
I can't read. It's terrible.
It
oh,
is
he wrote Savior. Right? No. Yeah, yeah. Mark Miller's first job as a comic book writer came when he was still in high school, writing Trident Savior with Daniel Vallely, providing art. Savior combined elements of religion, satire, and superhero action.
Exactly. But that wasn't his first DC one. That was his first comic. His first DC one was Swamp Thing.
Which is a pretty kick-ass title.
And
in
he actually, in the early 90s, his new take on Swamp Thing saved the book from going under for numerous months until he actually quit DC Comics.
Hmm. I'm finding it interesting as you're going through these facts how much he's really paralleled a good buddy of his and fellow writer, Grant Morrison.
Yeah, Grant Morrison.
Morrison's also done some work on Swamp Thing. And Morrison's run on Animal Man is considered to be huge.
It's funny. The first person that Mark Miller actually conversed with at DC was Morrison. So it's funny you bring that up. They're actually pretty good for that. Speaking but then he moved on to greater things, and he wrote The Authority for Wildstorm for a while, which is basically what comic today has become Stormwatch for DC Comics after they bought Wildstorm Comics. He wrote that comic for the longest time.
Did he do Wanted?
He also did Wanted, which was turned into a major motion picture.
Yeah, that's the Angelina Jolie and Mumbly Joe. I'm drawing a brain fart.
The kid that turns into Professor X.
Yeah.
Can't think of his name.
And Morgan Freeman.
Shoot this motherfucker. There's our PG-13 rating. Aha. But that's the best line out of that entire movie, by the way.
Yes. So, like, a lot of Miller stuff has a lot of knit and grit to it. But I think personally for me, my favorite thing he did was the Marvel Civil War.
I'm probably in agreement. One thing I've noticed with his writing, I actually have a little stack here of mostly Millerverse stuff, but I have Old Man Logan there too. I didn't bring my Civil War with me. But the one thing I find is that he does a fantastic job with already established characters and like properties. Civil War was fantastic. Old Man Logan's great. But Civil War was the first thing that made me stand up and notice. Like, it came after Red Sun, after Authority and everything. But Civil War was the first thing that he did that really made me stand up and take notice of this guy.
Yeah. And you know what? I highly recommend any of Miller's work for those who want to read. In fact, some of the best-selling stuff in my store is actually mainly Miller stuff. Civil War, Old Man Logan, and Kick-Ass are my three top-selling graphic novels, and they're all him. He also was responsible for starting the Ultimate Fantastic Four universe as well
That's
as the
true.
Ultimate
That's
X-Men
That's right,
universe.
He did. Yeah.
Now, one thing that I do like about Miller is the fact that he is one of the few guys who is, when he sells his properties to be done as movies, he actually gives 50% of the profit he makes off of it to the artist that also worked with him on the book.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, he's kind of cool that way, because when Wanted was purchased to be turned into a movie, the artist that did Wanted, I'm drawing a complete memory blank. I believe it was McNiven, got half of his proceeds, And the same when Kick-Ass, John Romita Jr.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Got 50% of the proceeds that he made off of the Kick-Ass movie.
And that's one thing. Miller really surrounds himself with fantastic talent. Like, you just look at McNiven, as you said, he did at least Civil War, since we're not sure about Wanted, we know he did Civil War, and they teamed up again for Old Man Logan. Lin-Neil Yu did Superior, which is a very particular style, but it's a style that I really enjoy.
It fit the book very well.
It really did. And McNiven again for Nemesis.
Yes.
And for Kick-Ass, like you said, John Romita Jr. And the whole Kick-Ass universe. And that's the other thing, is it's not like... He takes the style of whatever artist he has, and that builds that particular universe. Like, the Kick-Ass comic universe is John Romita Jr. Every yes. single book. Hit Girl, Kick-Ass 1, Kick-Ass 2, Kick-Ass 3, all John Romita Jr. So it really fits and becomes a really nice collection.
Now, I was going to take a moment to talk about some of the works he's done and kind of like a basic premise without giving too many spoilers away from some of these stories, just in case some of you listening would like to try, if you haven't already, reading some of Mark Miller's stuff. So I figure we'll start with the one that's right on the top of your stack over there, Old Man Logan. Mm-hmm. Now, this comic came out 3 years ago. It was a summer event in the Wolverine comic book. It started at Wolverine number 70 to 76, I believe was the numbering on it.
Look at the back while you keep talking. No, 66 to 72, and Wolverine Old Man Logan, giant size.
Thank you very much for the correction on that. But this is a story that is a kind of alternate reality, a future story, where Wolverine has to live in a world that has been taken over by the supervillains.
Decimated
by the supervillains. The supervillains at one point said, hey, wait a minute, we outnumber the superheroes 10 to 1. Why aren't we teaming up and just wiping them out?
Yeah, basically, why don't we just kill them?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just kill them? And this is what they do. And this takes place in a post-apocalyptic future where the villains control everything. Mm-hmm. And Wolverine has been in hiding, for lack of a better term, and this is the story that causes him to come out of hiding and pop his claws again.
Yeah, he's, due to circumstances that happen, and we won't go into detail, obviously, because it's probably my favorite moment in the whole book, but he's basically become a pacifist and won't fight anyone. He gets pushed around by this gang at the beginning, and it's the story of what causes him to become the man who is the best at what he does.
And
once again,
this is one of the top-selling Wolverine stories of all time, as well as, in my opinion, one of the best-drawn and artistic stories of our time. The art in this is just absolutely amazing. Again, this draws back to what you were saying about mm-hmm. him always finding the top-notch artist
yeah,
to work with.
Oh, McNiven does a fantastic job.
And McNiven's art in this is just over-the-top stellar, and it fits Miller's writing like perfectly. And for those of you, the graphic novel is $29.99, and you can find it at most of your comic shops.
It's fantastic. I got it from my brother, gave it to him for his birthday a couple of years back, loved it. And it's just, it really is fantastic. And I guarantee you, 20 years from now, if he's still in good shape, this will be a movie starring Hugh Jackman.
Yes, hopefully we can all
cross our fingers for that.
Now there's also the Marvel Civil War. Now this is the comic book series that pretty much saved Marvel from flatlining.
It made Miller's whole name.
Civil War?
It wasn't that long ago,
like 2007, 2008,
2005, I believe.
Yes, five. And into six, I believe.
Five and into six. But this story basically put Marvel back on the map. This was a story where the government in the Marvel universe said, hey, superheroes need to start being accountable for the damages they do in fighting supervillains. So they have to start registering their identities with the government, so the government knows who everybody is.
But only after a small town gets blown up and a bunch of kids get killed, right?
Well, yes. The new warriors basically go out and film a reality television show where they're tracing down the character Nitro. Now, Nitro's ability is he can basically detonate himself. And they basically, on camera, capture Nitro detonating himself due to their own stupidity.
Because they were kind of this superhero reality show.
Because they wanted to look cool.
Exactly.
They wanted to look cool, so Nitro blew up a elementary school full of children.
In Stamford, Connecticut. Oh, and that's one, and that another credit to Miller is that between that and that favorite scene in Old Man Logan I was talking about are two of the very rare times in comics where I'm reading a book and actually gasped. You? Like, I actually was like, oh my God.
You went to that one place you don't do with fiction. You don't kill kids.
Yeah.
And when you go there, it means something.
And exactly. It was just both of them. Was only one panel. I think it might have been a splash page for the Old Man Logan one, but it was only one panel in Civil War, and I knew it was coming because I knew that that was the premise that started the whole registration thing. So I even knew that moment was coming, but seeing it, you know, like actually having that visual again with Steve McNiven's just brilliant, for lack of a better term, art, I was just in shock. Like, it was just such a almost surreal moment to see in a comic book.
And that act basically spurs the Registration Act, which splits the hero community down the center, because half of them are like, have no problem with this. And the other half of them are like, why should we give up our identities? We save you guys every day.
It's a freedom thing. And everything.
And then they establish this thing called the 50 State Initiative, where they put superheroes in every state.
And that's the one cool thing about Marvel's events. And I don't want to get too far into just a Marvel thing, but that when their events are done, they actually do have ramifications that affect the rest of the Marvel universe.
And there's repercussions that last
exactly,
for years.
That last, exactly, a good chunk of time. And the cool thing is that it is kind of like hero versus hero, villain versus villain, so to speak. And while one side, I feel, is kind of portrayed in more of a negative light than the other, you can still see the point of both sides in this.
Yes. No, and that's the thing. Like, the line in the sand was drawn, but it's a very, very fine line. And both sides of the line had compelling arguments.
So here's the question for the group. What side do you fall on? I'm pro-registration myself.
I was anti-registration.
You know what? I was also anti-registration because I felt that, yes, superheroes should be accountable for their actions. But at the same time, if there was no superheroes, then Galactus would have eaten the planet a long time ago. The supervillains would have taken over the planet a long time ago. And I'm sorry, despite what the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are capable of, they would have had their butts handed to them by these godly
exactly.
people.
Well, I'm pretty sure during a cosmic threat, we're gonna discard the red tape.
And one of the best things about Civil War is that that book or that series caused me... It made me see a lot of different characters in a new light and made me appreciate characters more. Like, I didn't give a crap really about Iron Man or Captain America prior to Civil War. But those are two characters that came out of it that I really enjoyed. And while there were characters that I already did like, I saw them in a new light, like Punisher.
Where he like randomly kills those bad guys because they got
yeah like he's
or whatever?
Well it's what he does, he kills people, but the fact that someone who seems to have no real respect for authority, although he's not going to kill innocents, stood down to Captain America and respects Captain America more than anyone, you know, seeing stuff like that from a character that I had been following for years already, you know, and seeing that kind of different side of him, and that's what I feel he did with a lot of people. Spider-Man in this book is really kind of put almost into the reader's shoes of like the everyman, and he has some tough decisions he has to make in Civil War, and it's a fantastic book in general. It's one of those ones that I can't say enough good things about.
And the ramifications, like what you were saying, is when Miller does a book, there's ripples through the entire universe, and you take into account, for example, during Civil War, Spider-Man made his identity known to everybody because mm-hmm. he sided with the public thing, and how that impacted his life afterwards was basically what Spider-Man feared would always happen if people found out his identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he became the number one hit target on all the villains. He, you know,
and
he had to make a deal with the devil to unravel it, for Christ.
Yeah,
for
and
crying
he,
out
he
loud.
Realized it was a mistake. Unfortunately, it was far too late. He made the wrong choice for the right reasons, basically.
Yeah. And that's what I find a lot of Miller's books are, is you actually find that the characters in his books are forced to make the wrong choice for the right reasons, or the a lot of times. I mean, it carries over into Kick-Ass. It carried over into Old Man Logan. It carried over even into when he wrote The Authority. I mean, one of my favorite characters in The Authority was a Midnighter. I loved Midnighter. Mm-hmm. And, like, that guy was all about making the wrong choices for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of his stuff has that impact. Now taking over into Superman Red Son, you've got a retelling of Superman's origin as if he was based in Soviet Russia.
Yep.
And this was fantastic because instead of the ship crashing in Kansas and being raised by the Kents, this ship crashes in Russia. And what would happen if Superman was raised Russian?
And it's a fantastic book. I think it was actually one of the few graphic novels that got me back in the comics. I bought this when I was in college. So about 2007, I think, is when I bought this. But yeah, I mean, just the fact that what a difference 6 hours can make. Because that's where the Earth was when his spaceship was coming from Krypton. Like I said, it landed in Soviet Russia. And then just seeing how different characters that come out. I mean, one of the things that came out of Red Son for me is I really appreciated characters like Lex Luthor a lot more.
Oh, yes.
And the fact that Lex Luthor takes down Superman with a piece of paper in that book. I'm not going to say what's said on the paper because that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that kind of made me take notice of comics again, and I really wish I'd known that it was Mark Miller. I mean, I've got it on my shelf here, which Jeff is seeing my massive stack of graphic novels, which I really should take out of storage at some point. But yeah, I was just really impressed with how well he made Superman seem cool again.
Exactly. And then we got the Millerverse itself. The Millerverse began with Kick-Ass. And this, again, was turned into a major motion picture. And the comic itself is about an everyday kid who decides to become a superhero and what he does to become a superhero. And again, pure cut examples of how making the right decision for the wrong reasons can have ramifications in your life. Because this kid just gets decimated.
Yeah, he gets the crap kicked out of him. And his superpower, he quote-unquote picks up, is nerve damage. Yeah, he's basically just, I don't feel pain as much as you people do, which helps him save Hit Girl when he's getting thumped pretty good because the guy's like, I hit you so hard you can't get up. He's like, well, actually, I've got spine damage, so good luck to you. But yeah.
I'm handicapped. Take that.
Exactly.
You know, like, oof. But
and this is the thing. This is the thing with the Millerverse stuff. Is he Kick-Ass spawned Kick-Ass 2 and the Hit Girl series and Kick-Ass 3. Mm-hmm. But there's also Superior, which is about a kid who basically gets superpowers from a space monkey.
Yeah,
I won't explain how that happens. And then there's Nemesis. Nemesis is probably one of my favorites of his.
And it's another one with McNiven, so the art is gorgeous.
Exactly. Nemesis is a story about what would happen if a dude of Batman's caliber went evil.
And that's actually how they advertised it. I saw ads in comic books that just had a picture of the title character and just said, what if Batman was evil? And that was all it was, and then it just said Nemesis at the bottom.
And this the concept for the story is this guy that's like Batman kidnaps the president's family, impregnates his own daughter with the president's semen, and then frames his son for being gay.
It's actually with the son.
And puts a womb bomb on the actual daughter so she can't have an abortion or she blows up.
Is it the president? I thought it was the chief of police.
Or chief of police. Sorry. Yes. You're right.
There's a couple because when you first get introduced to the character, he's actually doing a couple other crimes. And you learn that this is what he does. He finds a target and he totally screws with the guy's head.
So it takes over their life, so to speak.
He just various circumstances. He ruins the guy's life and then finally kills him. And it's just, it's nuts, and it's about this battle between this police chief and this nemesis character who has the very impractical use of a all white costume. I mean, you're not getting blood out of that.
No,
but
no.
But think about the fear you could inspire if you were covered in blood in that.
Oh, true enough.
This is true. This is true.
And maybe that's where it comes from. But it's a fantastic book. It's not for everyone. Again, it's another one that I let a buddy of mine read, and he didn't care for it. And his main reason for not caring for it is actually very valid. It's that to him, there wasn't a single redeeming character in this. Even the police chief is kind of a bit of a douche. But I personally think that's kind of part of the book's charm.
Now, one of the big staple things that Miller has for him, and this is something that has gotten him in trouble before, is the fact that he has no problem not pulling his punches in books. They are gory. They're gory. They cross the line on so many things.
That in is fact, an absolute staple, is the gore that he has in every book. He's more than willing. And you even look at Civil War or the licensed properties from Marvel and DC that he's written for. It's toned down, Mark Miller, but there's still
hints of
graphic violence. Like there's still decapitations and stuff in Old Man Logan, you know, and it's just there's still, you know, there's even things in Civil War. He doesn't shy away from the violence and the gore. It's something that he really likes. And I'm always curious. I'd always be curious to ask him what draws him to it. Like, does he specifically go out of his way to find ways to make scenes gory? Like, maybe he was a fan of horror movies as a kid, or what his reason for it is.
The funny thing is, he's a very devout Catholic. I don't know where half of this twisted stuff comes from.
I was actually reading on his Wikipedia. He doesn't even swear in his personal life.
No.
He's like, yeah, he's
which is funny because there's foul language all through his books. Other
he's basically
than,
Mr. Rogers when you meet him, but yeah, otherwise other he's
than
pretty screwed up.
Civil War and Wolverine. You look at the Millerverse stuff, there's as much swearing as there is gore.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, I mean, this has got him in trouble because, Mike, I gave you the actual quote there, but he had late last year, at a convention, he was asked a question why he actually puts rape in his books, and his answer to this caused an uproar in female readers.
So allow me to read you his comment, and I quote, "The ultimate act that would be taboo to show how bad some villain is was to have somebody being raped, you know. I don't think it really matters. It's the same as a decapitation. It's a horrible act to show that somebody's a bad guy." I can see why that pissed people off.
The opinions reflected by Mark Miller do not represent those of Beyond the Gauntlet.
Yeah, yeah, hell no, this is his.
And here's the thing, okay, now this spiked numerous arguments last year.
We actually debated doing an episode because of this.
Yes.
Because we're I don't know if we can talk about this yet because it was way too fresh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. And this is personally my point of view on the subject. When you take something, when he's comparing something like rape to decapitation or something like that, okay, rape is something that is lasting after, that actually sticks with a person. Okay, decapitation, it's not like you're going to go up to somebody afterwards.
Oh, man,
and
I
be
was decapitated.
Well, what were you wearing to be decapitated? You know, where rape, it's like, what were you wearing to deserve being raped? Or what caused said person to want to sexually molest you in this way?
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, at the same point, I kind of see his point, too. I'm not saying I agree with him. But I see his point to it, I think, is just that
drive how evil
both they're both being used in the comic perspective. He's using them both no differently than one another as a plot device to show how evil someone is. I think the disconnect and what's caused the uproar to people is, you know, you don't see decapitations every day, but I'm sure there is, you know, women and men who get raped or attempted to get raped every single day. And I think that's the difference, is that one's a little closer to home, so to speak.
Well, that, and it seems to be the plot device when it comes to women in comics. Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing you can do to them? Have them raped. So I can see why this pissed a lot of people off.
Look at DC's Identity Crisis, which I think was Mark Waid wrote.
Yes.
That.
Was that the Sue Dibney thing?
That was the Sue Dibney getting raped thing, and that was a big deal.
In The Watchmen, I mean, the comedian raped
Silk Spectre.
Silk Spectre. Yeah. I mean, rape has been used in the comic before, and you didn't see Alan Moore really taking slack from it, or Mark
But at
Wade.
The same time, I don't know if any of them were actually asked that question.
I think at the time that this happened with Mark Miller and his comment, I think it was after last summer where there was that whole thing where the girl in the U.S. got raped and the football team got away with it, and the whole rape culture thing was in full swing on how, oh, the girl deserved it because she was flaunting herself. So, yeah, the football team had her way. The thing that happened in, I think it was Wisconsin or something.
Steubenville,
yes. Yeah.
I can't remember the names of the people involved, but I remember where it happened.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that was still fresh in the minds of people.
Well, that, and there was some comic book artist or writer, some woman had come out and said she's being treated like shit by the industry. And she had all these horrible stories to tell, like... I suppose, like, people have propositioned her and everything.
It was Wood, who writes X-Men.
Correct, yes.
Yes, he was the writer in question that this woman had said had propositioned her and everything like that, and apparently she wasn't the first one. And it was right around the same time as that, you're correct. Because I remember that. It was late last year. It was like November, December of last year, I believe.
And you couldn't get away from the whole rape culture story because, like, in popular culture, in nerd culture, it's been around for quite some time. I mean, I remember when people started talking about the rape culture with the whole Penny Arcade and the whole Dick Wolves thing, which happened, which basically, in short, they were making fun of World of Warcraft, and someone said, oh, they lull us to sleep, we're being raped by dick wolves, or something like that. And it was just kind of an offhand, stupid joke. And then people got mad about it, because obviously it's talking about rape culture, and it's a pretty serious thing to like talk about, because you just said, it destroys people for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. It really does, yes.
And it's one of those things where I kind of agree with people saying, can we get away from using rape as a plot device, so to speak. So once again, I can see why people got pissy at Miller for what happened. But then again, sometimes it's a really good plot element.
Well, it's not just that, but a lot of times, like when you have such surreal characters and, you know, people who can fly and shoot lasers from their eyes, you almost need something to keep them grounded and to bring it to reality.
Yeah.
And when guys can shoot lasers out of their eyes and everything,
and rip buildings in half with their bare hands,
what are you going to show readers that's going to shock them?
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, decapitations don't shock them.
Yeah, because,
you know,
like,
for whatever reason.
And I think a lot of the time that is why rape is used as a plot device in these books, is it's not so much as, oh, we're taking a big smelly dump on people that have been raped or anything like that. I think it's more of the shock and awe thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of the fact that, what can we show a society that has been so desensitized by things like horror movies and
video games,
atrocities and video games. What can we show them that actually still strikes a nerve?
Exactly. And that'll always be the case. That won't change.
And I think with Miller, because he creates such relatable characters and characters that do seem kind of real, I mean, especially in Kick-Ass, I know he uses rape as primarily a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It shocks you. It drives Kick-Ass to action. Because his girlfriend or his friend or something, or yeah,
his would-be girlfriend.
Yeah, his would-be
he's portrayed as the lovable loser, so he doesn't really. I haven't actually read Kick-Ass 3, but I have read Kick-Ass 1 and 2. He doesn't technically get the girl, because he's still that kind of that.
She thinks
loser.
He's kind of an asshole for not telling her, sort of thing, or.
Well, it's not.
It's
not
different
just an
in the movie.
It's just, the movie and the comics are very different. No, it's
the
just,
movie gave it the happy ending where he got the girl in the end.
At
and
least
the comic
the first
books,
one, yeah, yeah.
The comic books in the
he got
in the
a,
first
he
one.
Does not get the girl.
Yeah,
in
he
the
gets
end
a text message that's kind of funny.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's great being Kick-Ass despite getting his ass kicked. it's great being Kick-Ass. It's not so great being
Dave,
you know,
Lewiski or
Dave
something.
Dave Lazuski, yeah, exactly.
I haven't read the second one. I've only read the first one.
If you like the first one, you'd probably like the second one. The only difference is it's just, like I said, there's the comic universe and then there's the movie universe. And both play to each other's strengths. Like, they're very different things happen, but what happens in the movie works for the movie. What happens in the book works for the book.
I think one of Miller's things, though, is he's always trying to push the envelope. He's trying it's almost like he wants to see how much he can get away with until people cringe. And people go, okay, you took it too far.
And it
seems like that's kind of what he does with his Millerverse. Now, I'm not saying that's what he does when he writes for Marvel or DC or Wildstorm or whoever else he's written for. But when he comes to his Miller World stuff, it seems like when he writes his stuff, it's like, how much can I get away with before they go, okay, you've taken it too far? And I just find it funny, out of all the possible things that has happened in all his comic books, it was the rape thing that took it too far.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's gotten a whole, like, if you read Nemesis or the Kick-Ass 2 or Kick-Ass 3, I mean, there's like a scene in Kick-Ass 3 where Red Mist basically just goes through a neighborhood and just kills everyone. Like, all families, children, you name it.
I will say one thing that was actually kind of neat in the movie Kick-Ass 2 that they changed from the book. In the book, there's Colonel Stars and Stripes, and he's got his dog Sidekick. And they're both killed in the comic by Red Mist and his gang. But then if you look at the movie, they kill Colonel Stars and Stripes, but then
they leave the
whenever they suggest, someone in his gang suggests, well, do you want us to off the dog? He's like, what, am I some kind of monster?
He's like, I'm not that evil.
And in the book, they actually they decapitate the dog and Colonel Stars and Stripes and then swap their heads.
Yeah. And it's something that's brilliantly, that line is brilliantly delivered by Christopher Mintz Plisk.
McLovin,
there you go. That's what everybody knows. Delivered perfectly from him. He's like, what, do you think I'm some kind of monster? And he's just said, you know, he's just killed however many people and everything.
And then they even try and do the whole rape scene, and he has performance issues. He can't get it up. And he's like, well, fine, I'm going to kick your ass. And instead of, like, raping you, he puts her in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of funny with this guy. He always tries to push the envelope, but for the movies, he addresses what's happened, and it kind of works.
Yeah, and he tones it down for his movie renditions of them.
Yeah, well, I think he realizes that, you know, the movies are going to reach a broader scale audience than the comic books will.
Exactly.
And also, you know, he can only push the envelope so far with a movie before it's just people are going to say, no, it's not getting made.
Well, it's, you know, when you take into account that what Hit Girl's like a 9-year-old girl that runs around with katanas cutting people limbs off and whatnot. In the comic book, she's even more ruthless than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, if you guys want to read stuff that pushes the envelope, it's definitely the Miller World stuff. Kick-Ass.
It's fantastically written. Like what we've said about him pushing the envelope and, you know, using rape as a plot device. Be those as it may, the stories he tells are still fantastic. He surrounds himself by fabulous artists, as we've already said. He's one of those writers that I just, if something by him comes out, I'll check it out. You know, like he's like an Alan Moore. Like I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 30, 40 years from now, there might be a Mark Miller collection.
Well, it's kind of funny. He's made such a mark in the world that even the Queen of England actually acknowledged him and gave him an award for, Mike, I think you got it on the sheet over there.
He says, in 2013, was given honors from the Queen of England for art and literature for most excellent order of the British Empire.
So, well, I mean, he's
and
being
he's been nominated
recognized.
For 4 Eisner Awards and 2 Eagle Awards.
So apparently the Queen likes gore.
The Queen reads Kick-Ass.
There you go.
That's awesome.
That is kind of remarkable.
Or she reads Old Man on the Old Man Logan while on the toilet.
That's I truly right. love I this there. Man. He really is the best at what he does.
I mean, it's kind of incredible just to read what all this guy's done. I mean,
yeah.
I'm actually looking at some of the stuff he's written. My God, I was reading his Sonic the Hedgehog stuff.
Oh yeah, he one of his Eisner Awards that he was nominated for was for writing Adventures of Superman, which is like the kids' version of Superman.
That's amazing. The fact that he can go from blowing up a school full of kids to, hey, here's Happy Superman, or here's Sonic the Hedgehog and Tails fighting Dr. Robotnik.
And it just goes to show the versatility of the guy. And like we've talked about how much he likes his gore and everything. And he obviously, he's got things that he likes, but he's not a niche writer. He's not a guy who, this is what he does, this is what he knows, he sticks to that. He can go and write kids' books and then turn around and do Kick-Ass.
And then turn around and write for Marvel or DC or whatever.
Exactly. He can take licensed properties, he can create his own. You know, he's really kind of, despite the controversy that he's stirred up, he's kind of, if you're an emerging like writer in comics right now, he's kind of what you'd want to aspire to be. You know, like someone who you can pretty much give him any project and he'll knock it out of the park.
Yes. He's like a pure and simple Renaissance man of writing comics.
Oh, for sure.
He'll take whatever's given to him and he'll turn it into a fantastic read.
Now, what book would you want to stick him on, or what is he currently writing?
Oh, that's not a bad idea. What would you want to put him on that he hasn't done or isn't doing?
You know what I would honestly like to see him work on? Something that I honestly think he has the right sort of style of writing for. I would love to see him do Suicide Squad.
Oh, nice. Because that would very much be like in the same wheelhouse as like Wanted and stuff like that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
That'd yeah. be fantastic.
I think Miller writing Suicide Squad for DC Comics would be just, I'm done. There, you sold me.
I'd like to see what he could do on The Punisher.
Punisher, yeah, another good one.
That'd be a good one. I'd like to see what he would do with an Arkham Asylum book.
To
hold the puppet strings of Joker or Two-Face, Poison Ivy.
Would turn Joker into a real twisted...
Like, that was my original answer. I was going to say just Joker, but I'm like, I would love to see him do, like, a book on all the Batman Rogues Gallery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I can't argue with that either. Heck, you could even cross that in with the Suicide Squad, since a lot of Batman's villains are
especially
on the Suicide
with,
Squad.
Yeah, Deadshot and stuff like that, and Harley.
Yeah. No, I honestly think, now, as far as, I know that Nemesis is apparently being turned into a movie in Millerverse.
Oh, which is fantastic.
So I'm excited about that. And
actually, speaking of, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but this is a Nemesis question I wanted to ask you, and I don't want to forget. Given how it ends, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but given how Nemesis ends, is there a sequel coming anytime soon?
I have heard murmurings that, yes, there is, that he is going to release a second Nemesis in and around the same time that the movie is out.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
I think he's tying that out to be, he's setting it up that way. Because, yes, it did set it up very much to do another one.
Fingers crossed then, because while Nemesis stands alone fairly well, it does have this little inklings of a greater plot. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where he would go with that.
You know what? And all his Millerverse stuff, like even Superior, I think would be an amazing movie if they got the right director. Like if they did it kind of like a Chronicle style movie, I think it would be very, very cool.
Yeah. Not even necessarily the...
Or like more of like a Hancock or Chronicle kind of perspective of it, where it's kind of... You know, putting the hero into the spotlight when the hero doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, that would be interesting. One we didn't touch on because I've never actually read it. I assume you probably have, Chris. What about Super Crooks? How is that?
Super Crooks is basically Ocean's 11 with superpowers. It's actually very cool. I thoroughly enjoyed Super Crooks, and that's again another one that I hope he does a sequel to, because it's a group of basically bank robbers that have like these minor superpowers, and they're nothing like that crazy over the top, but it's how they kind of use those in the role of like a grifter or a hacker or whatever.
Interesting.
To kind of Ocean's 11 themselves into a situation, but then they run into the fact that the defending casino people also have superpowers, so it gets really
nice.
It gets really cool, and
I'll have to look into that. Add it to my Millerverse collection here.
Yes, no, I know you like your Miller, so
for sure.
I'd like to know why he's not working in like video games.
I couldn't answer that question.
It's, you know what? It's maybe he's gotten the offers, but it's just
he hasn't found the right studio to work with or something.
That, and you know what? With him handling the overseeing Fox's comic book movies and everything.
Their plus, version of the MCU. Right,
plus their writing, you know, his writing comics. Maybe he just has too much on his plate right now and he just can't get to it.
Because from what I understand, he's also, you know, a bit of a family man, too. So, like, he does still want to leave time for, you know...
doing stuff with kids.
Doing stuff with his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, Miller, definitely worth checking out, guys.
You'd probably write a pretty good yarn for a game, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd like to see him develop, like, a role-playing game. I'm just trying to think who best to handle it. I'd probably, if I had a choice, I'd give it to maybe BioWare for their work on the Mass Effect series. Or maybe Bethesda, who does the Elder Scrolls stuff. And I'm not saying I want Mark Miller to write Elder Scrolls, because that would be weird.
It would be interesting if he could, if he kind of highlighted a project that was almost like a Kick-Ass, where you created an everyday superhero.
Yeah, and just
and kind of stuck him in an open-end world and watch what happens, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, not even somebody that has superpowers, just because he's really
a vigilante.
It would be really cool to throw him in with a fresh take on a vigilante sort of game.
That would be interesting. It's like you could walk down the street and it's like, you
could
go,
stop this crime.
You could go to a dojo and train, or you could go to the arcade.
Yeah, or you could either go to school or go to the gun range.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it's going to take an effect on your skill. Man, Mark Miller, if you're listening, doubt you are.
Make a video game.
Make a video game, man. There's tons. Xbox One, Go, PS4. Man, if Mark Miller wrote Infamous, the video game series from Sony, man, that would be really friggin' cool. Just saying. Now I'm just kind of dreaming. Anyway, moving on.
Or you could even just take any of these properties that he's done, and you could probably turn half of them into
a game. Like I said, you could do the Miller World video game, where you literally become, and you could run into Kick-Ass. Or...
Especially Kick-Ass, because... There's so many, like...
It's tailor-made.
You could still become your own vigilante with the Kick-Ass universe, and maybe you could run into Dave Lazowski and Hit Girl and all them within the game, but you're still your own character.
Exactly.
And then you have a choice to side with Kick-Ass or the Red Mist.
All right, Mark Miller, or anybody who can get in contact with him, make a Kick-Ass multiplayer online game.
Yes, because the Kick-Ass game that exists is crap. Come on, guys. You can do better than this. Don't give it to Activision, whatever you do.
Meantime, Mark's like, I wrote that game.
Well, then, yeah, screwed up. So, I guess, what more can we say? Because we're coming near the end of the show here.
If somebody listening at home would recommend a book to Jeff, who would it be? What book would it be?
Well, first I would ask them how old they are. And if they're young, we'll go with Sonic the Hedgehog. I think I would recommend probably Civil War, because I think that would be the best all around book, because it's not as graphic and gory. But it's something that I don't want to say a younger reader, like obviously not a kid, but you know, someone in their early teen years that still couldn't get into an R-rated movie could read and enjoy, and something that somebody our age can enjoy. It's got gorgeous visuals. It's got characters that you know, so you don't have to worry about jumping into a book with unfamiliar territory. It's got a compelling story, with like a lot of different layers, different characters that you can, you know, look at. The only downfall to Civil War is there are a couple small moments that tie into tie-in books. So if you don't have the tie-in books, but it's not enough that I think you'd get lost. But that's personally what I would go with.
How about you, Mike? Out of what you've read of Miller's,
Superman Red Son, because that was the book that brought me back to Superman, saying, "My God, this is awesome." So, if I had to choose an alternate, I'd probably go Kick-Ass.
And not to mention, come on, like you said earlier in the episode, Lex Luthor tapes him down with a piece of paper.
I know, like just one sentence brings the Man of Steel to his knees.
Exactly. Anything that Mark Miller writes is just gold for me. But I'm going to actually pick something that we didn't really talk about a lot this episode, but that's The Authority. The Authority, to me, was kind of like his version of Guardians of the Galaxy, because they operate out of a space station, and they're a team of characters that they're just like, the moon is an egg that's about ready to hatch, and like there's just so many amazing things that happen in The Authority.
Nice.
I recommend checking out the first volume in trade paperback, and give it a read. It is Mark Miller, not on Marvel or DC, but with a with Wildstorm characters.
Kind of like a pre Millerverse kind of thing. I don't know if he necessarily created those characters, but it's at least it's not part of the big two.
It gave him some creative flexibility. Creative flexibility out of
flexing those writer muscles.
Exactly. I was a big fan of the Authority, but I believe that's probably it for this one, guys.
Yep. So what are we going to be talking about next episode, which you'll see in about 2 weeks, give or take?
We are going to be talking,
in the immortal words of Gimpy from undergrads, Star Wars.
Star Wars. We're doing a Star Wars episode, everybody.
All right, guys. So for Beyond the Gauntlet, we have been
Jeff DeHaan.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd.
And Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet.